everybody. First of all, I would like to thank organizers for inviting me to give the talk. And title of my talk is, as you say, that Eccentricity and Cross-Reactivity of Kinase Inhibitors. This is my new hobby. I normally work in the bioinformatics. So nowadays I am changing towards the chem informatics. Okay. So this is my institute where I work, and under this building at the ground floor is my center where my group is working. And we are basically computer center in our institute. So we are maintaining all the institute network, computers and all sort of things, as well as developing the softwares for biological problems, basically. Unfortunately, this picture is not coming. This is a map of India, so it has not shown here. I want to show that where is we are located. We are in the north of India, basically. Okay. As you can see, the protein kinase, they are very critical for the signaling, basically. They are involved in the signal pathways, and they are critical component for the signal transition. And if, let's say, they regulate the cell divisions, differentiation, proliferation, movement, everything. So, and they represent nearly 1.7% of human gene, basically. And they are responsible for the lot of things, particularly cancers, for the cancer, they are responsible for that. And how they work, basically. Let's say this is the, okay. Let's say this is the normal resting cell. So when there is a, this is inactive growth factor, when you have the basically growth factor here, then what happens, signal goes there, and then there is an activating intercellular signal proteins, basically. And then they activate the gene regulatory proteins, basically. So this is normal proliferation cell, but sometimes there is a problem, abnormal. Basically, this is an inactive growth factor, there is no growth factor, still there is an intercellular signaling proteins, and there is an abnormal active intercellular signaling protein, and they means undesired, means not required, but they change the gene regulations, basically. And this is called the cell present, or called the proliferating cancer cells, basically. Okay. So this is just the examples. They involved in a lot of signal pathway. Okay. The question is why they are so important. They are the key regulator of all aspects of, and including proliferation, invasion, and all sort of things. A number of diseases, especially cancer, involve unregulated kinase activity. This makes kinase an important target for drug development, and kinase inhibitors are successfully used in cancer treatment. And fortunately, there is already 4 or 5 drugs is already there in the market, which has been approved by FDA, and more than 40 or 50 drugs is under clinical trials. So now you can understand, they are very important. So the people are nowadays busy, particularly pharma companies, they are very much interested to design the drugs against the kinases, basically. So now question is, how we theoreticians can help, basically. Okay, let's, we have to understand the mechanism. And it has been shown earlier that they bind with the ATP binding pocket, and then they activate the substrate, basically. And when there is in order to stop this abnormal signaling, then we can design the inhibitors. What inhibitor will do, most of the inhibitors, they bind to the pocket, to the ATP binding pocket, basically. So when they bind to the ATP binding pocket, then they stop unnecessarily inhibition, sorry, unnecessary proliferation, basically. So they bind it here, and they stop proliferation of this part, substrate part. So basically, you can stop the cancerous activity of the cell, basically. So it will not do the abnormal proliferation of the cells. So here the challenge is how to design inhibitors which can fit into the ATP binding site. Okay, the question here, what is the major problem, basically? In human itself, there is more than 500 kinases. More than 500 kinases. If you want to inhibit one kinase, what happens? It inhibit that kinase, that's not a problem. But it inhibit also the number of other kinases, which is not desired, basically. So that's why we call the cross-reactivity. So that inhibitor are not specific to that kinase. Instead, it is also inhibit the number of other kinases. So what happened? There is a lot of side effects there. So challenge in designing the kinase inhibitor is to design the inhibitor such that it only inhibit the desired kinase protein, not the other kinase. So it should be specific. It should not have a cross-reactivity, basically. And why there is a cross-reactivity? Because if you see the ATP binding site of most of the kinase family, they are nearly the same. It means their binding pocket is quite similar to each other. When it's similar type of pocket, how you will design the different chemicals, basically. Means how you design the chemical which only fit to the particular sort of thing. And for example, human have the 500 kinases and they are all highly similar, particularly in the binding site. They have high similarity, basically. So challenge is how to design the kinase inhibitor which is specific to a particular kinase. This is just one example. They have some chemicals, they try the selectivity and necessity. So, as you can see, that there is a different kinase and there is a different inhibition level. The inhibition level are given here. So, it's not that it is not inhibiting. Inhibition is there, but it is also inhibiting number of other kinase. Okay. So, this is a major problem we face. So, now challenge is basically, can we solve the specificity problem of kinase inhibitors? Okay. Most of the molecules bind with the other protein kinase and cause the cross-reactivity. Of course, it is there. It is very difficult to design. If KD of inhibitor with the primary intended target tenfold, then the chances of cross-reactivity is very low. Means this is a normally acceptable norm, basically, that it should bind to the specific kinase, but it should be at least 10 tenfold less than the main activity. So what happened, let's say our group is a theoretical group, we are not doing any experimental things. We saw a paper published in the in Nature journal, and in that journal, what they did basically, they experimentally for 119 kinase, 119 kinase, they tried the 20 inhibitors basically. So what they did? They take one inhibitor and see the inhibition activity for 119 kinase basically. It means you got the matrix sort of things, 119 by 20. It means for each kinase, they check the 20 inhibitors. What is the binding affinity or what is the basically KD value basically. Okay. So this provides a good data set to us. Then we select those kinase for which six chemical molecules have significant bindings, basically. Because for some kinase, there was very limited chemicals which are inhibiting the activity. So we have not taken that. And we basically finally reach on the 29 protein kinases in this study where we are working. And we select only those proteins which shown at inhibition from at least six chemicals, basically. There is a total 20 chemicals. So if it is, because what happened, if I will take the everyone and if it is not showing inhibition actually, so it is, you cannot generate any learning techniques or any equations basically. So you should have at least the six chemicals which are having the KD value. Okay. So we select the 29 chemicals. Okay, the next question was, how to do it? So here in the chem informatics, we use the normally QSAR, quantity structure and descriptors, relationship, QSAR. And initially we use a software called MonSpan online. This is a web server freely available. And we calculate the East structure descriptors. These are the standard descriptors. One thing I would like to clarify here, our intention, our group intention is to develop the freeware, public domain software. And we want it should be available free to the public. So we make sure always that we use the servers or software in our development which are free to the public. So we found that this is a software which is available online and it was free for the public. So it calculates the 8 descriptors basically. Okay. Then we use another software called PAdmit basically. And this is again the online server for molecular descriptor. They have some restrictions. And we calculate the 600 descriptors basically. And these descriptors are the different topological descriptors, electrostatical descriptors, constitutional descriptors. So they are different type of descriptors basically. So we have taken almost all the descriptors available at PAdmit. Then in the next step, we remove the insignificant descriptors and selected T2 molecular descriptors for further study. What happened? Though there is a large number of molecular descriptors, even some software allow more than 2000 descriptors basically. Descriptors means chemical descriptors, let's say charge of the chemical, total number of bonds, these are the descriptors basically. Okay. And topology, overall topology. So in some software even give the more than 2000 descriptors. What happened? Most of the descriptors, they are duplication. They means duplication in the sense they are basically same type of information, little bit different. Or it's an inverse correlation actually. Where one is showing hydrophobicity and other is showing hydrophilicity basically. So we don't need all these descriptors basically. We need the descriptors which are usual. So this way we remove the descriptors. Based on the basically, there's a two or three criteria we use. One is basically if they are highly correlated. Means if we, the correlation between one descriptor to another descriptor is, let's say, more than 0.95, then we take only one. Or it's a minus 95, still we take the one. Okay, so this was our overall strategy. Calculate the molecular descriptor of kinase inhibitors. Remove similar or insignificant descriptors. Calculate correlation between KD and descriptors. Select highly significant molecular descriptors. Develop model for prediction. So what happened? As I say, a large number of descriptors is there. First criteria is to remove the duplicate or similar descriptors. Second criteria we use whether the descriptor have any correlation with KD value. So here is the KD value of chemicals, here is the particular descriptor's value. Then we calculate the correlation. If correlation is high, then we prefer the descriptor. It means it have direct impact on the KD value. So we select the descriptors. And finally, when we get the, let's say, limited set of descriptors, then we use some machine learning techniques. It may be artificial neural network, maybe support vector machine. In our case, we use support vector machine, basically, where we classify using the SVM support vector machine regression mode, because we have the actual KD values. Okay, so this is the example how we did it. So it is a, let's say, kinase 1, and these are the basically N chemicals. Here N is about 20 chemicals, and then for each chemical we calculate the descriptors, basically, let's say M descriptors, and for each kinase we calculate the this sort of aesthetics. So we do two type of models. One is called general models, where we are not bothered for which kinase you are developing the model. Okay? In that case, we select the descriptor based on the fact, without bothering about kinase, we simply, we have the KD value this side, and we have the descriptor this side. And then we calculate the, let's say, descriptor 2 versus KD value correlation. And if it is making the high correlation, then we take it for further study. So we call top 5, top 10, like that, basically. So this is called the general model. But in the general model, there is a problem that it's difficult to find out the cross-reactivity. So we also developed the basically kinase-specific models. So what does it mean by that? In that case, we will take, let's say, for kinase 1. And these are the 20 chemicals we have. So then we will calculate KD value versus for this descriptor, not for considering all. So then descriptors will be specific for this kinase. Okay, and then model will be developed only for that kinase. So that what will happen? The finally the model will predict whether a given chemical will inhibit that particular chemical, that particular kinase or not, basically. So that is called the kinase-specific models. Okay, these are the some values. These are the basically protein kinase, and these are the basically SVM models using the, let's say, top 5 descriptors. Means we have the top 5 descriptors, then we give it to the SVM machine, support vector machine, and then we learn it in the regression mode. So what happened for each kinase? For each chemical inhibition, there is a one value is observed value, which is experimentally determined by experimental science, and we do the prediction using the support vector machine, and then we find out the correlation between the predicted value and the observed value. So we calculate the correlation between the predicted value and the observed value, and this is a correlation we repeat. Unfortunately, correlation is not very high. Maximum we reach up to 0.79 or 0.9. So you can see this is a poor correlation, and average I can see 0.482. But we cannot do anything. This is the data available. We cannot help here. Okay. Then we try similar way on the top 10 descriptors, and again the average is a little better, but it's still 0.50. This is a general model where we are not bothered about the basically which kinase basically this. This these results basically. Okay. Then we use the Moleskine software, and then we get the average 4.15. So the best is basically by using the top 10 descriptors 0.50. Still, it's not very good basically. Then we develop the kinase specific models. As I say in my last slide, here we take descriptors which are specific for the particular kinase. It means these descriptors are making good correlation with the KD value. We take them and then we develop the SA model. Here, though average is not very good, it's a little bit higher, better than others, but for some kinase, we get very good results basically. It means for these kinases, we can predict the KD value with high confidence basically. If I consider like that, if it is more than, let's say, 0.85, the correlation is very good basically. Okay. So it means for some values, let's say this kinase or this kinase, we are 96, like that actually, 0.96. So they are doing the better correlation. Means it means between the predicted value and observed value, correlation is high. Means the prediction is quite good basically. So this is the model we have.
What is MN there?
Hmm? We are not able to detect basically. This is model fail basically. So another challenge we are facing basically, chem informatics, it's not like bioinformatics. I will tell you the major difference between chem informatics and bioinformatics. In bioinformatics, lot of software is freely available to the public. Data sets are available to the public. But chem informatics, this is not the case. Everything is based on the proprietary softwares. Our aim, aim of our group is from beginning to develop the freeware, to develop the open software. So idea was that we will develop the server where you can put your chemical and ask the question which kinase it will means which kinase is a target kinase, means it will inhibit which kinase basically. So give the chemical, it will tell or select the kinase that this is my kinase, this is my chemical. Can you tell me whether it will inhibit or not inhibit? If it didn't inhibit, what is the level of inhibition basically, KD value? But here's the problem, I will tell you. Once we develop this type of model, ideally, you should simply give the name of the chemical, SDF format or any standard format. And then our software in the background should calculate first the descriptors, then SVM model should be used to calculate it. Unfortunately, none of the freeware, they allow us to use their software in the background because they have the licensing problems. They say you can use it for your own purpose and all sort of thing, but if you want to serve the public, then we will not allow you. So what we did here actually, what we are saying, we have simply say that this is your kinase you have selected, and then we are saying this is the descriptor. Name of the descriptor. Please calculate descriptor value from any software you have with you and then put here basically. Once the descriptor value will be there, then we can calculate it. Now this is a major challenge for us for next few years that how we make this descriptor calculation free. So our group is working nowadays on the different libraries we are working that how we can make the this is structure, this descriptor calculation free basically. That's a major challenge for us. So this is available to the public. And now, because I have the time and I have decided to talk about the, I hope about OSDD, Open Source Product Discovery. This is a major project is running by the CSIR and SKB, the major person who has initiated this process. Under that, we have the different modules basically. One of the modules where our group is actively working is computational resources for drug discovery. Because open source for drug discovery, that's overall, that includes everything, basic computational part, as well as experimental part, biological part. But this part, what we call computational resources for drug discovery, called CRDD, is a basically in silico model where we are collecting or providing the information related to the computational resources, that is databases required for designing the drugs basically, or developing the drugs, or software required for that purpose. Means everything information related. So we are doing this work here. So this is the site we have actually here. And what is the advantage of this site basically? So we have classified all the software, servers and databases in the compiled form. The first block, they say target identification. So here we have compiled all the software from literature which is related to the target identification. That includes genome annotation, gene prediction, promoter prediction, transcriptor prediction, like that basically. The next is proteome annotation. Proteome annotation means you have the protein in your hand, you want to know the function of the protein, structure of the protein, basically subcellular localization of the protein. So all the tools related with that is available on this part. Then potential drug targets. There is some proteins are commonly used for the drug target. For example, is GPCR, kinases, and there is a nuclear receptors is also there. they are used as basically drug target. So all the target related softwares, let's say prediction of GPCR proteins, kinase proteins, these are available on this part. Then of course the protein structure prediction is an important part when you are designing the drug or target. So here the all softwares related to the database are available. In addition, we have, this is a target identification related problem. So this is a hub business, we call the bioinformatics basically. And this is the other part, virtual screening, QSAR technology. Then docking and QSAR, chem informatics, and this MIR and SIRN business, where you can design direct. Then drug design, lead optimization, pharmacoinformatics, ADMET, clinical informatics. Why we are developing here basically? Region is there, you will find a lot of sites. You will find related with the bioinformatics, chem informatics, that sort of things. But I have not found the sites which provide the complete information. If you are working in the drug design, you need all these softwares. So here, you get from a single source, you get all the information, whether it's a target identification, or it's a molecule design, or it's basically clinical testing. Even the software related with the clinical informatics is also available there actually. And here, question is how to develop this site with the help of the public. Though one way is that we will just put the different sites, databases and all sort of things. But we want to involve the public. So here what we are asking, we are saying to the experimentalist basically, please pose your problem here. And same time we are asking computer scientists, can you solve this problem basically? And based on that, we will give the money to solve the challenging problems basically, awards, reward systems basically, so that more and more development will be there in the area basically. Then we have the concept of library interface. This is another interesting part basically, library interface. What happened? We have lot of tools available in the literature, like R. It's commonly used for statistical work basically. But not too many people who are experimentalists know how to use the R. Because you have to load the R on your system, then you have to learn the commands, and then you can use it. Question is, can we develop the interfaces which can make the interface, basically interface between the user, experimental scientist, and the developers? Okay. So what we are doing, we are developing web interfaces. So simply you want to calculate the statistical, let's say, p-test or t-test. You don't need to understand what R command is required. Just go on our website, put your data and say, I want p-test or I want t-test or ANOVA test or whatever you want. So that's the idea basically here. You don't need to remember the basically commands. Instead, just pose your problem and then you can answer. So what we are doing here actually, we are developing the interface over the libraries. R is the one example. CDK is another example in the chemical development kit basically. There is a number of libraries are there, like Bioconductor is there. Plenty number of libraries are there. They are very powerful. You can use them for number of purposes, but most of the biologists are not using them optimally because they have to learn how to use that actually. So what we are doing to developing the interface, so making the life of biologists comfortable, that's all idea. This is another part we are developing. This is called basically, there are two Wikipedia we are developing. One is Indipedia, where we are collecting information related with the India, all the resources. But that is more related with the drugs, basically. We are collecting the information related to India. So there is a lot of information available, which is not available to the public. So what we are doing, we are collecting the information from India, basically. Now, question is why we are developing another Wikipedia. Wikipedia is internationally well-known for the resource basically, and everybody is using. Why we are developing it separate? Because we want the specific information related to the India. So we don't want the general sort of, so we are collecting that. Another part we have started, that called Drugpedia. In Drugpedia, though lot of articles is there on the Wikipedia, main Wikipedia, but they are not very scientific, because they have been developed in general point of view. What we are going to do in the Drugpedia is all the information related with the drug and more scientific basically. So these articles will be more comprehensive and more detailed information. So the Drugpedia will be available. As you know, it's very easy to contribute to the Wikipedia because we are using the same software, MediWiki basically. So I will request the audience, whenever they find time, just go to our site and contribute generously, because ultimately it is going to help the public basically. This is public information. So whatever you contribution you do, your history is maintained, so it is known that this article has been contributed by you. And it will be freely available to the public basically. So I will encourage the public to contribute to this idea. This is a forum discussion basically. We have what type of software one has to develop, what type of problem the people are facing in the case of the basically development of internet. And major problem we are facing particularly in India, we have one side, lot of manpower, where our students are doing their courses, they want to do the summer trainees or some training program, or they completed their degrees, they want to have some experience. Okay? But they are not getting the opportunity how to contribute or how to get the experience basically. Because most of the institute, they have limited space. They cannot admit all the students basically who are doing summer trainees or sort of thing. So what we are suggesting basically, they can do the virtual summer trainees. They don't need to be present in our institute. Okay? What they can do, they can register wherever they are basically, have their computer network, and then they can start to contribute to this CRDD or OSDD basically. And at the last, we can give the certificate that this fellow has contributed this much to the CRDD. So they will give the, let's say, summer training project as well as basically experience. So we can utilize the manpower for this development work. And same time, we are also thinking about the virtual jobs. Virtual jobs. It means you stay wherever you are, only you register to our site and contribute here basically. And based on your contribution, we can pay for you. So this is another model. This is just example that some routine we have already developed. Let's say if you want to calculate student t-test basically. So you don't need to understand what is the R commands basically. Just simply go on our website and put the variable 1, variable 2, and then say what you want to calculate. So here is just another simple statistical tools. Is a student t-test. Here is a simple statistical tool. Just put your values or upload the file and say I want to calculate mean, mode, median, whatever is there. So we are developing this type of tools. These tools are not difficult to develop. It's very single command job in the R basically. But question for biologists to load the R, to do the exercise is a big headache actually. They don't want to do that. So what we are doing, we are developing interface. Just come on and then cut and paste your data and then get the values. So this is another server for PLS regression. This is for basic pharmacokinetics. Again, these softwares, we have not developed. They are based on some libraries basically. And these all softwares are free for public. This is another server where we are developing some softwares because there is a different type of work. One side we are just collecting, compiling information freely available to the public for related with the drug design. That's the one simplest part we are doing. And that will be useful for the public. Other part is like Drugpedia or Wikipedia. Third part is basically libraries interface. Fourth part, we are developing the softwares. And we are encouraging the public to develop the softwares and to contribute it to the site. One is available here is protein-protein interaction developed from our group, where you can put the name of the two sequences when you want to check whether these two proteins will interact with each other or not. I mean, you just give the pair of the protein and it will calculate whether they will interact or not interact. This is another interface on another library called CDK, Chemical Development Kit. This is very good library for cheminformatics. But again, if you want to use this library, you should know how to use the Java. and then you can use the subroutine. So it's not very easy for a simple person to use these, this library for calculating descriptors. What we have done, we have developed simply web interface. And in the background, we are using the library, CDK. And here is an example. Just put your name of the chemical, either paste or put as an upload file in the SMILE format. SMILE is a standard format in the chemistry, quite commonly used to present the data. Or you can put in the HDF format or MOL format. And then say what type of parameter you want to calculate. Topological parameters. I have not put the all list here because this is just a screenshot. But around more than 150 descriptors are available on this web CDK. Another concept we are developing, that's a meta server concept. What happening at present, you will find the number of software for a particular purpose. Even if you want to calculate protein structure prediction, even for secondary structure prediction, you will find at least 10 methods are available in the public. So what you have to do, you have to go here, there and all sort of places. Cut, paste your sequence and every time you have to do the work. What we are doing here, the concept of meta servers. Meta servers means you submit your sequence at once. Let's say paste your sequence here only and then select the name of the server. These are the name of the servers developed at group. This is for predicting subcellular localization of MTB proteins basically. This is subcellular localization of prokaryotic protein. This is subcellular localization of human protein. Like, they are all servers related with the subcellular localization developed at group. So you don't need to go to each server. Still paste your sequence once and then click which server you want to use it. Say on. And then say submit. And you will get the result from the single source. So this is a concept of meta server. So what we are doing, going to do in the next few years, that most of servers we will try to integrate at one place. So instead you do the moving this server, that server, and then paste your sequence and then see the output. What we will do, put your sequence once and then select which server you want to use, and then you will get the result in the compiled format. From you, this server, this is the result. From second server, this is the result. So we are not doing any great computational job. But what we are doing, we are providing the facility to the users how to use these servers efficiently and effectively. Okay, at the last, thank you. And here again, as I say, when I go to any conference or workshop, I say I have come here to advertise our group basically. So why I say advertisement? Because our group is developing web servers from long time. And we have more than 70 or 80 servers basically at our group. And all servers are free to the public. We are not charging anything from academia basically. So you are welcome to use these servers basically. And this is the name of the site basically, www.imtech.res.in/raghava, or go to http://crdt.osdt.net. Okay. If even this site down or slow, then you can use my another mirror site, bic.ums.edu. That is a mirror site I developed in the USA. So it's available. And these are the some servers. If you are interested in the protein structure prediction, basically. So we have a lot of servers here for predicting whether the beta turn, alpha turn, gamma turn, or it's a peptide structure. So we have a large number of tools, surface accessibility, for predicting the protein structure related stuff. Then we have a lot of servers related with the subunit vaccine design. If you are working in the subunit vaccines basically, then we have a number of tools here, whether predicting B-cell epitope, T-cell epitope, like that basically. Okay. Same, we have the tools for genome annotation. If you are interested in predicting genes, repeat regions and all that. So we have the, a lot of tools for genome annotation. Then functional annotation, we have a lot of tools for predicting GPCR proteins, subcellular localization of the proteins, like that basically. Or virulent proteins, allergic proteins, so we have a lot of tools. Then we have the few databases available at our data site basically. So these are the basic some information and you are welcome to use them. So thank you very much, Dijwad.
you. And have you any questions, please? Okay.
Extraordinarily well conserved across very, very diverse protein kinases. Over the last 20, 25 years, large number of atoms have been made and the crystal structures have been, you know, determined, published in very high quality papers. But the state of the art as of now, it looks like, the people are really, really struggling to, generate the specific inhibitor to kinase if you target that region. So the whole area seems to be undergoing sort of metamorphosis to focus on those regions of the kinases which are highly specific to that kind of kinase. For example, many kinases are regulated by other subunits and domains, by the domain-domain interaction, and also the substrate binding site. You know, now the whole field is going through the thing. And this is the comment I have to make, and my suggestion, in case you are trying to relate the observed inhibitory constant with the support vector machine based analysis that you are making, I would think that the various descriptors that you are putting in the SV for the inhibitor as well as for the kinase, we don't know what descriptors are going to have an effect. It would have an influence in the conferring the interaction.
Yes.
So I would go by if you have the whole spectrum of kinases and their inhibitors and the experimentally determined binding constants, I would go with the modeling of the structures of the complexes and try and understand the interactions as given from the model. After all, we have a number of crystal structures of the inhibitors, kinases, the complex form. They are all in the ATP binding site, by the way. So we could use those structures and learn that from the unbound forms of the kinases and try and relate the parameters that you obtain from the cross modeling with the experimentally determined.
Agree with you. Thank you very much. And I have not described, but what we are doing actually, we are trying to combine the QSAR business and docking business basically. If you talk to any structural biologist basically, they will say docking is the best thing. You take the pocket and try to fit the chemical in this one actually. That's the docking business people are using. And this chem informatics people, they are not bothering about the pocket, but they are bothering about the chemical. So what we are doing actually in the next steps, we are combining the two theories and then we are trying to see how it can do. And all the chemicals you say suggested, which chemical, which descriptor is basically making the relations. So we have provided all the list and we are working to make it further actually, so that person will know that these are the descriptors which are making better correlation chances there. Yeah, you are right actually. We are still in the fancy, we are still start the work just now actually. So it will take some time. Yeah.
Okay. Another question?
Yes. I saw one table in the first part.
Okay.
There is some numbers in red, some numbers in black and some numbers in blue. I not understand. Some numbers are black, some are red and some are...
Red it means higher side basically. Which are showing the high correlations we have put in the red basically.
High means cutoff.
Yeah, we have taken some cutoff. So, they are in the red. And blue is average basically. At the bottom, it's average basically.
And how you test accuracy of the model, your SVM model?
This is again same standard, international standard we are using, five-fold cross, leave one out here because it is the number of examples is less. So it means, let's say there is 20 chemicals. So for 19 chemicals, we learn it and we develop the SVM model. For the remaining one, we take as a test case and then we predict it. And we also know the actual value. So if you repeat the cycle 20 times, so for each chemical, we will calculate the, predict the KD value. So you have the predictive value as well as you have the actual value, experimental value. Then we find out the correlation between two. So this is a practice. Okay,
my question is also related to the last part of your presentation. You know that you have some, in your system you have a large amount of tools for biologists and they have some quite simple interface. But for my opinion, the problem is that biologists often did not work with only the one tool. Actually, it takes blast, then get it result from blast, then use it for searching for other proteins, then predict structure and so on. So this is kind of pipeline system. Do you plan to use, because otherwise he can do it manually. And can you plan? Do you plan some integration of your program in your system?
Yeah, we are planning in the future that if it is your protein, then you want to put a structure, then you want to subcellular localization like that actually. So we are making that organization way. Because MetaServer is the just one part. MetaServer is a simple...
MetaServer is a quite simple case of this because it cannot use it subsequently.
Yeah, that's right.
Agree
with
that.
Okay. We are working on
that. Okay.
Yeah.
One question, please. Sure.
How you solve the problem with parameter estimation for methods? You provide for users possibilities to use many tools, for example, for successful prediction. But any tools, single tools, concrete tools, have a concrete number of optional parameters. And if I, especially it's important for organization pipelines, because in some cases we need to use some number of parameters, in other cases another number. We will integrate in automatical style, integrate different type of methods, but not only one method in one point, one task, one method. No, your idea to use meta theory for one point, for one task, you use many, many different methods, and each method have yourself optimal parameters. This is your first question. Another question, my question is about how you combine results. If you will get single results from single method, and what user, what can I do with this different type result? One method will be same. This protein is located in the site of place, but second method, this protein is secreted protein. But how I can decide about this
protein? Yeah.
Maybe you plan to develop some approach for taking post-process integration.
Yeah. Regarding your first question, when you are using any tool, when you are using any tool as a biologist, I will advise don't use these tools blindly. Because these are the prediction tools. There is no guarantee that whatever prediction you get it is correct. First thing we have to understand this part. So this is the reason we give the different thresholds. What you call parameter, we give the different threshold. If you are interested, that probability of correct prediction should be high, then you should select the high threshold. But in that case, you may miss some part basically. Okay? But chances are there, if you predict it, that this is correct. Okay? And it's vice versa. If you reduce the threshold, so even the remote possibility, it will predict. But chances will be very less, probability of correct prediction will be less. In general, in all our methods, we already give by default a value where the sensitivity and specificity, there is a balance basically. Okay? And we provide the same time option to the user that they should select according to the need. So we don't want to restrict the users according to our wish, basically. That's the reason we provide a number of parameters. But despite all that, we put by default one parameter which is best according to us, equal sensitivity and necessity. So this is answer to your first question. Second question, as he also asked, post-translation results and further. So we are still working that sort of things actually. Yeah.
I would also only encourage the development of such resources. I personally, I like this idea very much because of even this meta server may provide an overview. Actually, I would like to use all the predictions and just to look through the list.
Okay.
That's very interesting. And also, I would like to ask you if you this internet address make it available.
And yeah, this is, yeah, it's available to the public. Yeah. Oh, can you do something? Just hold on. Board up.
I can solve the problem.
All right. The last. This is right. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Now it's Vijay. Yeah. Yeah, all published. None of the server here is unpublished. Every published, and if you go to the further, it gives the reference. If you are using the server, this site is. And regarding you asked the question, why we are using number of servers. So this field is growing. As you say, the no method is perfect method. Only the, over the time, we are improving the accuracy. So I always advise to users, use the latest method. Okay. And published method, as you say, in the good general. So all paper are published. And second thing, subcellular localization, we itself, our group, developed at least 5 or 6 methods for subcellular localization. Why we are doing? I will give the example. We developed first method for subcellular localization of eukaryotic protein. And then we realized, after analyzing, after publishing, we realized that this method is very good for Saccharomyces cerevisiae subcellular localization, but not good for human being. Because in the training, we use the data which come from the Saccharomyces cerevisiae, because that is well-studied organism. So what we propose, that there should be separate method for subcellular localization of the human proteins, basically. So we develop the separate method. So like that, we develop the separate method for the Plasmodium falciparum, which is not again related with anything. Same for the mycobacterial proteins. They are not fitting anywhere very well. So this is the reason we have developed the different methods. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And the next presentation is by Alexander Veselovsky, Institute of Biomedical Chemistry, Russian Academy of Medical Science, Moscow. The topic of the presentation is selection of new target proteins for drug design in genome of Mycobacterium tuberculosis.
I want to thank for the organizing committee for invitation for take part in this interesting workshop. Well, the modern pipeline for the new drug development is consists of several steps. It's decision identification target protein selection, discovering the lead compound and their optimization, the preclinical trials, several steps of clinical trials, and manufacturing. This is a very long way. It takes about 10, 15 years, and are very costly. It's the last estimation said that it's about $1 billion for one drug. And this process, the optimization of this process can be done only on the first steps of the pipeline, because the last steps is under the strict state standards and laws. And at this part is the only way for optimization, decreasing the costs and times for the drug development. And the computer techniques can be used in many steps of this process. First process, this is another presentation of pipeline, and in white square it shows the steps that can be done by the computer approach, and in the gray there is a step that can be replaced by the virtual experiment. It may be done by experimental testing. Well, the story that I want to tell to you is a very long story. It is started about 10 years ago when the full genome of Mycobacterium tuberculosis appeared, and the most part of the human genomes became available. Well, and we start our investigation for using the genome information for drug target selection. The idea was quite similar. We propose that we can take the genomes, annotate and classificate the genes, and use this information for the drug target selection. Well, in one investigation, we proposed to use the competitive genomics technology. This is a simple example of this method. If you have the genome of one bacteria and you have the genome of another bacteria and human genome, you can select the parts that show in red that contain proteins that is similar in both bacteria but different from the human genome. So you can propose that some of the protein from this part can be the good target for antibacterial targets with wide spectrum and with a low risk of side effects for the human. This was the main idea. So we tried to, then we when began to start our works, we can think what is the request for ideal antimicrobial drugs, and if we can formulate it, we can translate its properties to the ideal targets. So we can propose that the ideal antimicrobial bacteria must have the effective suppression of growth and reproduction of microorganisms, so it can translate into the target properties as is important for growth and reproduction. So also, it's for drug lethality to pathogen, so it's essential for survival. Definite antimicrobial spectrum, octanol targets microbial species and states. And selectivity, it's two parts, at minimal host toxicity and minimal alteration of normal microflora. And so these targets must be absent in the host and in the host symbiont bacteria. And it can be selected some technical requirements. If you want to use target-based drug discovery using computer approaches, you must have the available of three-dimensional structure of the protein, and if it's preferred to use the mechanism of action of the drug, so you know, must know the function of this target. Well, it can be seen that most of this part can be easy to formalize for the automatic drug target selections. This investigation can be made. You have the target genome. You take each gene from your target genome and compare it with the all genes from the genome of another species. And we can select them by the febrile similarity and the unfebrile similarity. If you find in the target genome, take the target genome and find that it in the genome of the related species you have the homolog protein, we can think that this is a febrile similarity. Whereas if we find the gene in target genome similar to the human genome, it can propose that it is a febrile similarity. Based on this concept, we designed the program GenMesh. It's a program for protein target selection and for antimicrobial drug discovery using compatible and functional genomics. Well, the main algorithm of this program is you have the database of genes. You have one is the target genome. You can compare using the alignment program BLAST with the set of protein from PDB database from the genome of the related species, and based on this you have information for about available of the spatial structure of this protein or its homologs, presence homologs in the genomic of the related species, and based on this information you can select the potential drug targets for the antimicrobial drugs. Well, this is the first example that we used when we developed this software. This, in the left, is a selection of the target for antimicrobacterial agent that without without influence for the human microflora. This step-by-step selection leads to 41 potential targets. And at the right side, there is a selection for the common target for microbacteria and fungi because there is known that several antifungal drugs can have effect on microbacteria strains. And this is the investigation, the first filter for the selection is the most important filter was the similarity of the protein in the PDB database. This is since this program was optimized for further using the selected targets for the computed drug design, and the values for the cutoff of this site was that we used about the 40% of its density. This value of cutoff was taken from the two reasons. First of all, it was taken, this values of cutoff was taken from the CASP experiments. CASP at a compatible analysis of structure prediction. This is international experiment that tried to understand what is the most optimal method for three-dimensional structure protein modeling. And it was shown in this experiment that there is only one method that quite good result for three-dimensional structure prediction. It is a homology modeling, but it is necessary that the density of the insect sequence for modeling protein and the template protein was more than 30%. So in this our program, it was used cut off 14 persons for more optimal parameter for modeling. And the second reason that what if we if there is the similar protein is known, the dimensional structure is known, so it the condition for expression, purification, crystallization for the protein target that we can select from our approach was similar to this protein, so it can be easy to obtain the three-dimensional structure of this protein. So, and this is the main results of for prediction of target selection of from in genome of Mycobacterium tuberculosis. This was take the full genes from this bacteria and use four criteria. There is no homologies in human, identical in both Mycobacterium strains that was able, and that time the similar of the proteins from the another Mycobacterium strains, it's Mycobacterium leprae, and the homology of the protein from the protein database is more than 14 persons. Comparing all these sets, it was shown that only 13 targets certain protein can be selected as a targets from as the potential targets. And the further expert prioritization gave only high 8 targets. This is a full list of these targets that we found in genome Mycobacterium tuberculosis. In red, it was shown the protein that was eliminated and at the last step of selection. After this list of protein was obtained, we found in the literature that additionally two proteins was also selected as a potential targets for another species. This is showed in yellow. But at that time, this investigation wasn't continued. But several years ago, the Russian Federal Space Agency asked us to participate in the program for protein crystallization in the weightlessness. It is proposed to crystallize protein at the International Space Station, Russian sector. The task of our investigation involves the selection of the protein interesting for pharmaceutical industry and finding new inhibitors for this protein. So we take back our list of Mycobacterium tuberculosis targets, look at this once more and select one protein as an interesting target for protein for crystallization. This was well, phosphoproteinyl adenyl transferase. Well, this protein enzyme is a penultimate and rate limited enzyme of bacteria coenzyme R biosynthesis. It's catalyzed the transfer of adenyl group from ATP to the phosphoproteinyl that leads to the phosphocoenzyme R and the next step by another enzyme it's phosphorylated to the coenzyme A. When this This protein was expressed in the Institute of Bioorganic Chemistry of the Russian Academy of Science, and it was crystallized in the Institute of Crystallography, Russian Academy of Science, using crystallizers that was developed for the space station. Several months later, when it was crystallized, the three-dimensional structure of this protein, I will call him PAT for short, was available from PDB database banks, so we can compare them, both this structure. It could have seen that they're very similar. In the active states, we can see some little difference, but it is not very important as we think at that time. So we take the structure of the protein from the Russia, because, for example, it's patriotism, and they have the best resolution for the drug discovery processes. Well, this is a schema virtual screen for the new part inhibitor. It's quite usual, most usual process. You have your molecular database. The first step is the pre-processing of this database. The pre-processing means that you deleted from the full database compound that you think, you believe that they can't be the inhibitors of this protein. It can be the compounds containing metals, very small compounds, or very big compounds, the compounds that don't contain any atoms of oxygen, nitrogen, so the compound that you believe that you don't further select for the experimental testing, so you can delete it before you dock these compounds. So the next step is docking. It can be done by the different programs. Then the calculation of additional scoring functions, selection compound. Of course, the last step is a manual selection by expert, and transfer the list of the selected compound to the experimental group for experimental testing. Well, the docking compound is the process for position, for finding the position of the compound in the active sites, in the binding, or maybe it's binding sites. So, but it is necessary not found the position, but you always need to estimate the values of the interaction of this ligand with the protein, because if you don't see such, so you can see the such picture as there is a numerous compound that reflects the size and shape of the binding sites, but in most cases it is not interesting for you because you need only several compounds that can be further select for the experimental testing. So this is made by the empirical scoring functions. This method the advantages of this method is that it is very fast, semi-automatic, can be applied for 3D models. Also, it's not need the extensive training. It is proposed that can be work on any proteins. But also, there is many disadvantage for this function because, first of all, the authors of the scoring functions showed such pictures and showed that their scoring function worked very good. They is very optimal. But as my viewpoint, they worked good only for the training sets, but because when you began to use it for the in the real experiments, for the your own targets, the results is much worse. The second problem for the scoring function is that they don't let, that there is no correlation between these scoring functions. This is a picture for one set of compounds. It shows four different scoring functions, and you can see that there is no correlation between them. You can check this scoring function with these scoring functions on the one picture, but there is no, you can't see, the picture don't change. Well, the main reason for this is that most of the scoring function check only one component of the free energy bindings. One, it's, you try to estimate only enthalpy component of the binding energy. But in the most, is my viewpoint, in the most cases, the driving forces for the interaction between protein and ligand, it's the entropy component of this, of the binding energy. But the scoring function don't, in most of the scoring functions, they don't estimate it. Well, what they do, how to do in this situation? One of the popular at present approach is to use several scoring functions. When you dock, you of course use one scoring function for estimate the possible position of the ligand. But you, the second, this step, you calculate the additional set of scoring function and trying to use consensus, using consensus for select the most probable compounds for the testing. The main idea of using this consensus is that you hope that if the most of the scoring function predicts that this ligand is a bad ligand, it's a really bad ligand, so we can eliminate it. But you can see that if all the scoring function predicts that this compound is a good ligand, it's a really good ligand. So this approach can eliminate on, can select only false positive, false positive mistakes. Well, you take in mind these ideas, we used the part structure for the docking of the compound in the, from the commercial available compound from the molecular databases. Well, we take the database, full database contains about 300,000 compounds. We selected, preprocessing them, and decrease it to about 150 compounds and dock them into the active sites. And it was selected about 18,000 complexes. When we began to analyze the results, we surprised seeing that the deep cavity in the active sites don't accommodate in the compound from docked compound don't accommodate the deep cavity in the active sites of compounds. When we began to investigate what the reason of such strange situation and found that the reason is the conformation of one amino acids in the active sites, that this amino acids have such conformation that make this cavity too narrow to accommodate by the compounds. So we said it was a pity. And change the conformation. It's must be done, change only one torsion about the 10 degrees and adopt this our databases. And this is so we obtained the more complex. It's about 24,000 complex, and using the we calculate the scoring function, select. And using the set consensus of the scoring functions, we select. So when we docked, make the second docking, most of the ligands accommodate in the active sites was accommodate also this deep cavity in the active sites. So we select about 15 compounds for experimental testing. This compound was bind, and they were tested using the biosensor approach using equipment Biocore 3000. And one of these compounds was and showed the inhibitor activity. It's about 10 micromoles. It's not high, but it's quite enough for the first step of lead compound selection. And at present, we start our work for find the similar compounds for trying to hope more active compounds with more inhibitor activity. And we hope that the story, this long story that was started 10 years ago, don't finish today, and the protein that we selected for and the inhibitor that we found was crystallized in the space. It's I want to thanks our colleagues from the different institute from Moscow for participate in this work, and thank you for your attention.
Much for nice presentation. Please, questions? Okay.
In the target selection of the mycobacterial proteins, you have used BLAST to find out those mycobacterial proteins for which no homologs are present in the human.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. However, in your table that you showed, there are three ribosomal proteins. Ribosomal protein S4, S5, and S8. For which you have a very highly diverged proteins in the ribosomal complex of the human as well. You can't pick up the similarity from BLAST. But if you look at the three-dimensional structures, or if you consult databases like SCOP by Alexei Musin in Cambridge, you will see that they are very distantly related, actually.
Вопрос касался того, что, Саш, сравнение только по первичной по структуре, по последовательности, потому что недостаточно, надо сравнить еще по первичной структуре.
Yes,
сходство по первичной структуре можно
сказать. Yes, of course, the compound, the proteins with low homology can be very conservative in the three-dimensional structure, but when we use this approach, we use only the sequence of the proteins, not taking into consideration the three-dimensional structure.
And my comments also that if you use if you compare the structure, you compare it in terms of backbone, RMSD. But I think for active site, backbone is not is only part of the structure, and side chains can influence. So if you substitute some side chains in the active site, it may occur that your drug will not influence human ribosomal proteins. So if you select some drug for at this level of similarity for Mycobacterium, am I right?
Still have cross reactivity because the local region where you have the catalytic site,
mm-hmm.
they may have a very, very similar arrangement. If you, you know, superpose the whole structure, you know, you don't see the similarity of the functional site very well. But if you take only the functional residues, then you will see a good similarity.
Okay. Okay.
I can add that this program that would use only sequence alignment was optimized for the further three-dimensional structure design. So it's, we can select by this approach the possible targets. Then, we, of course, we can look at the three-dimensional structure of this protein. Is this the structure of this protein is known or by this similar homologs with the three-dimensional structure. It's, of course, we use three-dimensional structure.
Okay, thank you. One question.
My question is, do you use flexible docking or rigid docking for
yes.
selection packets well. Compound from the library?
Well, we use the program DOC6. It's a used rigid target, rigid protein, but it's flexible for the ligands.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for presentation, for questions. And now we we have about 20 minutes to have a tea break. So at 11:30 we will continue. Please take dishes. Okay. Dear colleagues, my pleasure to introduce you, Dr. Pukupesh Taneja. He is from the Institute of Genomics and Integrative Biology, Delhi. And the topic of his talk is new approaches to identifying drug targets using an integrative approach.
Thank you. Before I start, I have two duties. Firstly, I must apologize for the delay in the morning session. It was a technical problem on my part. Secondly, I must thank the organizers, especially Dr. Ramachandran and Dr. Dmitry Afonikov, for giving me an opportunity to talk about my work on new approaches to identifying drug targets. And to do this work, we are focusing on one organism, which we have heard about in the last 2 days, which is Mycobacterium tuberculosis. Since most of you know that Mycobacterium tuberculosis is the causative agent of TB or tuberculosis, it is the leading cause of death by any single bacterium worldwide. And according to WHO estimates, there are approximately 9 million new cases of infections of tuberculosis every year. And Dr. Vaidyam Goram had shown in one of his slides on Sunday that there are about 22 deaths per 100,000 people in Russia as well, which amounts to something like 5 to 10,000 deaths by tuberculosis in Russia per year. In India, the problem of tuberculosis is more intense. If you look at this map, there's about large infectivity due to tuberculosis, mostly in India and many other parts of Central Asia. Yeah. there's a large infection of tuberculosis in India and Central Asia, which suggests that the disease is of very much relevance to our region. The current drugs which are used for treatment of tuberculosis are essentially these four drugs, isoniazid, rifampicin, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol. They are called as the first-line drugs. But the major problem with these drugs is that the duration of treatment is very, very long. You have to give these treatments for up to 6 months. And for patients and their family, it has a very large social and economical impact. Most of these drugs were discovered almost about 50 to 60 years ago. Even the second line of drugs, which is streptomycin, kanamycin, or quinolones, they were also discovered a large number of years ago. And unfortunately, there has not been much efforts towards characterization of the targets which the drugs bind to until more recent years, and which has basically limited the understanding of the actual mechanism of binding of these drugs to their targets and the improvement of these drugs for better efficacy. There are a few new drugs which are supposed to come out in the next 3 to 4 years for treatment of tuberculosis. Many hope that these would cut down the treatment time. Moxifloxacin especially has shown some promise, especially in South American region. But this drug, again, is supposed to be given with the frontline drugs. It's not a substitute for them. Although there are some reports that the treatment time may be coming down to about 2 months by addition of moxifloxacin, but since it is only in preclinical, rather clinical trials stages, one needs to see how this would develop in the coming years. If you look at these new proposed drugs, even now the new drugs that are coming up do not have very well characterized targets, again limiting and their further improvement for better efficacy. The tuberculosis is not only a problem of the developing world or Central Asia. If you look at another map released by WHO a few years ago, in the Western world, there is a problem of MDR, which is multiple drug resistance, or more lately, extreme drug resistance, which is prevalent in even in Russia and many other regions. So this is just to show that TB today is a global problem, and since the current drugs that we have are very old, we now need to have new drugs, new targets for which we can develop drugs, or new approaches for drug development. So in this direction, CSIR, which is my parent institute, it has initiated a new program which is called as Open Source Drug Discovery. During the roundtable discussion today evening, we'll have a more detailed presentation on this. But just to briefly tell you how this is going to work, what we in CSR and Visage is that people with all expertise in science, which is mathematical modeling, computational biologist, chemist, biochemist, doctors, all would come onto one stage and cover different aspects of drug development in a common platform, and try and to use an integrative approach toward drug discovery. Some of the developments that we have done in this program have been discussed in a few talks yesterday and today. I'll just pinpoint a couple of those. CRDD, which is Computational Resources of Drug Discovery, was shown by Dr. Raghav early in the morning, which contains a lot of computational tools freely available on the web, which are necessary for drug discovery process. The development of SysBorg was shown by Dr. Ramachandran yesterday, which basically is a systems biology approach for tuberculosis in which we can use to ask different questions. There's also a blog on the site in which we encourage, or we want to encourage scientists to log in and share their thoughts on any ongoing experiments, and also share their experimental data at a much quicker pace so that experiments can go in a faster pace. The Open Source Drug Discovery package has been divided into 10 different stages or 10 different work packages. Most of the work packages are also divided on the basis of the expertise of expected scientists who would join For instance, WP1 would involve computational biologists and bioinformatics experts to propose new targets and help in the discovery stage. They can also participate in identification of chemical libraries or lute optimization. Similarly, we would have biochemists helping in the expression of targets, chemists involved in the synthesis, and of course doctors in the clinical trial stages. Since most of us gathered here have a lot of expertise in computational biology, as I said, we can easily fit here, and this is the current focus of my work right now. So, we are, as I just mentioned, we are trying to look at new targets in, that we can use to treat Mycobacterium tuberculosis. And while we want to discover new targets, we thought, let's raise a question. Can we look for targets which would have a high potential of low toxicity in the host? And I'm glad to note that the strategy that we approach, which I'll show in a couple of slides, was somewhat similar to Professor Belevosky's during the earlier talk. So the current major aims that we want to do is we want to use comparative genomics approaches to identify new targets, and we want to use identify chemical libraries which we can use for molecular docking experiments to test these targets. To identify targets, what we have done is we have made use of a comprehensive peptide signature database which was prepared by one of our colleagues in the institute, Dr. Devashish Dash. So what he has done is, in this database, he has about 63,000 peptide signatures, which are unique and absolutely invariant, signifying that they might have some importance, important roles in function. And they have evolutionary pressure and are present in at least 7 different organisms. So we use this database as a first stage to look for peptide regions on proteins which are important for function. The length of these peptides was shown to be at least 8 residues, so that they would be unique in principle and present only in one organism. So their length is 8 residues or longer. But to have their roles in function and be present in active site, they have to be present on the surface. Not surprisingly, most of these peptides, because of their evolutionary pressure, are mostly buried, about say, 60 to 65%. However, there are a few peptides which are present on the surface and present close to the active site. And hence, we know that they would be performing some important function roles, and these can be exploited for further work in molecular docking experiments. This is just to show you where the peptides might be present in certain proteins when they are buried. This is RNA polymerase beta prime and some other proteins. And the peptides, invariant peptides, are highlighted in different colors. So the buried peptides, of course, perform a role of folding nuclei or acting as hinge nuclei in different proteins. These are some of the representative examples. But as I mentioned, we are interested in proteins which are present on the surface and present close to the active site so that they can be exploited for further work. Another database approach that we have developed at IGIB, rather as an integrated program, is the Mycobacterium tuberculosis SysBorg. Once we identify a target, we can use this platform to ask different questions on our targets and the pathways in which it is involved. So this is the second thing that we use in our work. And having identified some of these tools, we are now ready to ask questions. So we identify the proteins that we are interested in and see what kind of functions do these perform and whether these would be useful for further work or not. So now we are ready to, as I said, ask questions. So we took the comprehensive peptide signature database as our initial data. It contains about 64,000 peptides. We limited our work onto peptides which are present on the surface of proteins and close to the active site. And we looked at Mycobacterium tuberculosis SysBorg database to see which are the important functions performed by these proteins and whether these are essential for survival of Mycobacterium tuberculosis or not. Once these criteria is passed, we applied additional filters. There's these peptides should be absent from the human proteome. So, and also they should be absent from the human gut microflora or symbionts, as Dr. Veselovsky showed earlier. And these would help us minimize that secondary binding sites of potential drug molecules and cause lower side effects. So once we have identified this, we are now ready to do some docking experiments. I have a slide summarizing all these steps. So identify invariant peptide signature on a protein molecule. Discard the peptides or proteins having those peptides from the human proteome and from the human gut flora. And once we have assigned functions and decide that these proteins might be useful for further work, we are ready to perform some docking experiments. So by this strategy, we could shortlist about 25 proteins, and I list examples of pathways in which those proteins occur. Some of these were the pantothenate biosynthesis, which is basically coenzyme A biosynthesis. Also, the shikimate pathway, which is involved in biosynthesis of aromatic amino acids. NAD-dependent DNA ligase, Secate translocase, and all these proteins are actually present only in bacteria and absent in humans. So our strategy picked out unique proteins and unique peptide regions on proteins, which are present only in bacteria, so we can specifically target mycobacterium tuberculosis and possibly some other pathogens. But to do our molecular docking work, to identify potential lead molecules, we also need to identify a ligand database. And instead of looking at a small subset and limit our search, we decided to use the Zinc database, which contains about 5 million compound library. This is available free in, from UCSF. And once we identify some molecules, we can also purchase those molecules from different vendors. So it contains information of where we can buy these commercially. And we can test it out in the lab, whether the lead molecules would really perform a good inhibition of the enzyme target or not. To have a test or to have a test of how our docking algorithm is working, we went to the drug bank and looked for possible decoy molecules or inhibitory molecules which are mentioned for some of the proteins. And we found that for enzymes in the coenzyme A biosynthesis or aromatic amino acid synthesis, there were a lot of small molecules listed as potential ligands or inhibitory molecules. And the docking of these molecules against the protein drug along with the zinc library would tell us the performance of the docking experiment. We used various softwares to carry out this docking work. I'm going to present scoring and ranks only from FRED, which is, most of these are available free again, except surface dock. So we were using mostly freeware tools so that things can be done quicker and cheaper. So as I said, one of the pathways that we picked up was biosynthesis of aromatic amino acids. And since this pathway is absent in humans and present only in bacteria, and we are solely dependent on our diet for getting these aromatic amino acids, this is an important pathway which we can try and block from for potential drug targets. So the three proteins in which we found to have unique peptide signatures were coricismate mutase, coricismate synthase. So which are, this is the mutase, this is the synthase, and this is the coricismate molecule. And another synthase enzyme, which is the first committed step in aromatic amino acid biosynthesis. So we could take these three protein molecules, and we started doing docking experiments on two of these, for which we could find decoy molecules. And we found that the decoy molecules docked very well with very good ranks. EPS is enol, I don't remember the full name, it's a subset of coricismate synthase, and it was also used to detect the success of the docking experiment. It also is in the top 1% of the docking program and shows that all molecules dock very well. So these scores basically tell us three things: that a docking experiment went on well. Second, these potential drug molecule listed in drug bank could be, could serve as good lead compounds. And third, we could also find other molecules which are close to this rank and modify those for, and develop them further for drug development. So here, as I just mentioned, EPS is one of the subset, and we use it as a decoy in a smaller subset. And we could test, we wanted to see whether the top molecules, how are they binding, whether they're binding in the same site, and whether they're binding with similar affinities. And we found, I'm sorry, I don't think this is visible very well, but both bind in the same pocket. And in fact, their binding modes are also very similar, except that the new molecule that we found had a tyrosine residue further ahead. And these are the peptides, invariant peptides of cortisone synthesis, which we found with our strategy. So the protein molecule, or sorry, the lead molecule binds very close to the active site, and it makes interactions with invariant peptides. And we now found another closed ring, which may have additional impact and for the development of the drug. With some other top-ranking ligands, we found a similar thing, that there might be another closed-ring structure, and we have now gone to testing stage of these molecules in the lab. So we are expressing the protein, and we'll be initiating binding experiments very soon. This is another molecule binding against cortisone synthase and another tyrosine ring present. So we now show that this tyrosine ring might be important, and as I mentioned, we want to test this out in the lab. The other pathway which we picked up, which is unique to prokaryotes again, is biosynthesis of coenzyme A. Again, these are the enzymes highlighted in red, which we could pick up with our strategy. And these are basically the pantothenate kinase, the pantothenate synthetase, and another methyl transferase. So since there are so many enzymes, and the first committed steps are basically here, the first question that many people ask is, which enzymes should we target? And we don't know. Since all these three enzymes which I just mentioned, they are unique to prokaryotes, all have invariant peptide signatures. That means a ligand molecule binding to the active site and interactions taking place with these invariant residues present in these invariant signatures, all of them might work out very well. However, the current strategy which a lot of labs are now proposing is that instead of blocking only one enzyme, if you have a possible mode of blocking both, finding inhibitors for both steps or these two steps, so that we basically throttle the entire pathway, is where the crux is going on, and perhaps that is the way to go further. To find out important proteins, because we can list about 25 proteins by our strategy or about 41 proteins by Dr. Veselovsky's strategy, which are the ones to really focus on? So another way to look at is to see what are the protein interactions. Which was highlighted, the importance of this fact was highlighted yesterday by Dr. Srinivasan. So proteins which are involved in interacting with other proteins may have very important roles in the cellular cycle. And we want to use this strategy also to identify important proteins in our strategy. So we took help of Cytoscape, which helps us visualize molecular interaction networks. And we made these interaction networks from for the 25 watt proteins which we found, and basically found three main hubs, and these hubs were involved for SEC-K, which is a translocase, a pantothenate biosynthesis protein, and GroUL2. So this definitely, since it is coming up from two different strategies, seems to be a very good enzyme to possibly target. What about SEC-K1? Here's a word of caution, again, taking a cue from Dr. Srinivasan's talk yesterday, that we should select targets with care. I'll show you why. Because SEC-A1, it doesn't really work on its own. It is part of a translocase which encodes the SEC-Y, SEC-E, SEC-G, and the SEC-A protein. It binds to ATP molecules, and upon binding ATP molecules, there's a transformation, there's a conformational change, and the protein would transverse through the membrane. But as a test, we did molecular docking experiments with SEC-A molecule, and we found that proteins, sorry, ligands molecules with phosphates and actually ATP and GTP, GMP rather, they found they gave fairly good ranks, and these were listed as potential ligand molecules in the drug bank as well. When we looked at some other top molecules, we found other they contained either a phosphate group or they contained a nucleoside group. So there is some kind of ATP analogs would probably work very well, but I know that pharmaceutical companies have basically given up to try and make inhibitors for ATP-like molecules, ATP analogs, because of their general nature and their role in so many different pathways. And since SEC-A protein itself is going to be part of only one complex, it doesn't make sense to try and just block this ATP binding site. So perhaps blocking of a domain-domain interaction so that SEC-A doesn't bind to SEC-Y could be another strategy. Since picking up invariant peptide signatures was a very important step in our strategy, we have now tried to improve the initial database, which was the comprehensive peptide signature called as COPS. COPS contained a lot of redundant sequences because the minimum length that we said was 8 residues, and even longer residues could have similar peptides with identical initial 8 residues. Also, there were a lot of overlaps and other things which we have removed. And from the original 12,000 peptides from a COPS version 2, we have now come down to over 5,600 invariant peptide signatures. And we can use this to assign functions to different proteins. I'll just show you some of the results with this new database. This is a strategy on how we reduce the database to finally get about 5,600 unique signatures. The peptides are present in 4 different relational tables, and they have a pep ID as a primary key using which we can do our searches. So this is a website of the database, and I would encourage you to try and use it for your work. So basically what you can do is you can feed in a protein sequence, and you would get the sequence of the invariant peptide. And you can see whether what kind of roles these peptides would play. And these proposed functions would also help in annotation of many proteins. So this new role which we found, we tested out for some of the organisms. And we found that although the coverage of annotations was a bit low, about 12% for M. tuberculosis and about 33% for Haemophilus, the accuracy was more than 90%, which is fairly good. One limitation, of course, in these 3 set of organisms is that they were also present in the COPS database. So obviously we expect them to be picked up. So we did another set. Unfortunately, I do not have a slide here. But we did test with organisms which were not present in this initial 52 list. And we again had a coverage of about 20% and accuracy of more than 90%. But it always picks proteins or peptides with high accuracy from prokaryotes. We tried to do annotations for Archaebacteria, and we got somewhat low accuracy of about 80 to 82%. So this shows, since the original database has been derived from prokaryotic eubacteria, this works very well only for eubacteria. So again, taking analogy from Dr. Raghav's talk a little earlier, when he said that for certain things, a generic method may not work. He's making databases for humans, peptides, humans, plasmodium, and saccharomyces separately. So similarly, we think that archaebacteria, eubacteria, and eukaryotes need to be done separately. I think this is my last slide, and before I end, I'll just show what kind of annotations for I should perhaps mention in this previous slide, that we could also annotate about 24 hypothetical proteins of M. tuberculosis, 11 for E. coli, and 56 for Haemophilus influenzae. Now, this may seem to be a small number, but even this small number helps a lot, because in many cases, we have absolutely no idea of what kind of role a hypothetical protein may perform. And when we look at databases, they say they are conserved hypotheticals. So we know they are important at certain stages of the cell cycle, but have absolutely no more information than that. So the annotations that we got...
This is your last slide. Can you just go back and explain? I mean, the previous one, can you explain a little bit more? I mean, I think you
This thing?
What is it, huh? You are doing here is...
So we take our... we take feed in a protein sequence, and we try to see whether there is a invariant peptide signature present in the sequence. If there is an invariant peptide signature present in the sequence, from our PEP cluster database, we give a similar function to that protein. And
90% you are getting how? I mean, that 90% figure which you kept saying.
This. So this column is percentage. So we could map 824 peptides from 494 proteins. And we found that the accuracy of this was 90%. So we take the protein, we give functional annotations to those proteins, and we map, check those annotations with actual annotations of the proteins. And then we compare how much accuracy we got. So the hypothetical annotations that we get are still very ambiguous. We cannot say any more than it's a protein, maybe an ATPase, or a protein, maybe a methyl transferase, but I think it's still better than having no clue at all. Lastly, I would just like to thank some of the people involved in the work. Professor Brahmachari initiated the invariant peptide work with Dr. Debashish Dash, which was also continued by my group. And Dr. Aparna Basu was involved in creation of the PEP cluster. And most of the funding for this work has come from CSIR. And I would like to thank the students who have participated in this work, and DST and RFPR for funds for this workshop. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And please ask questions. Okay.
It is the minimum line that we chose, because it represents that the peptide would be unique in one organism.
Yeah. That I understand. Okay, so you just tried to make a selection from this database suitable for drug design. Okay, that was the main reason, because it's a little bit another point of view on the selection.
Right. So, that is the main reason, of course. But if you look at MDR or XDR, there are about three or four major ways in which microbacteria would have MDR. One would be efflux of the drug. Second would be it finds an alternate pathway other than the one we are trying to block. Third is it mutates the gene. So since we have taken peptides which are evolutionary, which have evolutionary pressure and absolutely invariant among so many organisms, so we think that any change in those organisms would be so much deleterious to the function of that particular protein that Mycobacterium tuberculosis does not want to change them.
Yeah. Okay, but you mentioned also that most of these peptides
are present in the
blood. Yeah, to be the core
yes.
for formulas.
Yes, yes, of course.
So it might not be affected by drugs directly.
Right, so we are only considering the proteins which are present in the near the active site. So which, of course, if you remember one of my slides, constitutes only about 10 to 15% of the overall number of peptides.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that number helps. Because the original number is 64,000.
What is your definition of near the active site? How do you define near?
So basically, they take part in interactions with the known ligand.
It's a
way,
biosynthetic pathway not present in the but why is there in adiacid
biosynthesis? So, some of the initial substrates for synthesis, we need, for instance, vitamin B5, I think it is, which needs to be taken from diet. So, some of the steps are absent in humans.
Okay. So, this pathway is absent or the enzymes of the this most pathway? Of so, very low homology, that's why the criteria doesn't detect.
No, most of the enzymes of this pathway are absent in humans.
Thank you. Two questions. First question is common. We here in this conference, we hear about some strategies for drug development against bacterial pathogens. And I think that each strategy will make some evolution, some evolutionary, direction. Make change direction in evolution of bacterial genomes. If you choose strategy, you will develop drugs against proteins which have no similarity with human proteins. Pathogen genomes will be changed for mimicking. Mimicking in future after mutations. Mimicking sequence with human proteins, and the pathogen will be growth which will contain proteins with similar with human. If you will choose a strategy for drug selection which not similar with some symbiotic. Bacterial, for example, E. coli, this also will be. How do you think? What is way to to step such evolutionary changes in bacterial genomes? It's my first question, common question. I think we have to thinking about this when we develop some drugs. And second question, more practical question. Concerning of do you plan to use your peptides as drugs? As maybe not drug,
sure.
But maybe by using these peptides you can develop some mimicking.
Mimetics.
Right. Which will be stable because peptide not stable. It's clear. And how about this direction of your work?
Yeah. So first question is basically kind of a question open for discussion. I would like to answer it in the way that I think it was Dr. Srinivasan who mentioned yesterday that he is looking at proteins which are altering the human host. And Vinod also gave a presentation of using microRNAs as a strategy for inhibiting protein and pathogen interactions. So one of the slides in which I showed, which is basically not my theory, but what is coming up in literature these days, to try and take two or three different proteins in a pathway and block all of them. So that can be perhaps altered to try and take two or three different strategies, microRNAs along with classical chemical drugs, and take them in a way so that they can both be used simultaneously. So that is my take on that. The second part was about using peptidomimetics, the invariant peptides. So we have thought about that as well. The major limitation is, of course, synthesis of the peptides, because if you take the peptide in general and the lengths of these peptides are very small, they would adopt multiple conformations. And they may or may not go and bind to the regions that we are interested in. So that is a small limitation, and we have not started anything, yes, but we have been thinking on this lines as well.
You can use some circopeptides.
Yeah, so that's what I said. So we need synthesis, chemical synthesis, to look at this and try and design those.
Did you look at the nucleotide sequences of such peptides? Is it possible that some this conservation can be functional at the RNA level? For example, it has some mRNA has some special structure at this point.
We have not looked at nucleotides. We focus only on the proteins.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. And I would like to introduce you Dr. Alexey Rudko from Research Institute of Medical Genetics of Tomsk Scientific Center of Russian Academy of Medical Science, Tomsk. And this is perhaps this presentation will take us to the ground from the bioinformatics to real medicine. And it will entitle Genetic Aspects of the Tuberculosis Susceptibility in Siberian Populations.
Thank you, Dmitry. Dear colleagues, first of all, let me to thank the organized committee for this seminar, folks at the organization and interest program. My report will differ from previous because it devoted for genetics of host organisms. It is well known that tuberculosis now is a great world health problem, and there are some data which demonstrate it. From 1850 to 1950, the period of two great world wars, there are 2 billion people have died from tuberculosis. It's a very great number. It's about one-fifth of world populations. And now every year is about 2 million deaths are becoming from this infection. And also it is necessary to take into account such aspect as 10% of tuberculosis cases are occurred on the basis of HIV infection. Many thinkers and doctors of past was interested but real nature of consumption. And at first time, some of them thought about the significant role of heredity in disease development. For example, such famous scientist as Hippocratic wrote that some people are more resistant to disease, or absolutely cannot withstand to. As children with epilepsy are born from epileptic patients, simply the children predisposing to tuberculosis are born from consumptive. Similar ideas stated by well-known Asian physician Abu Ali ibn Sina. In 19th century, the famous genetics and mathematic Francis Galton wrote that not only capacities and talent are inherited, but also a number of physical and biologic properties such as tendency to drunkenness, vagrancy, tuberculosis, cardiac disease, and longevity, as well as moral and religion. I should also mention it a Soviet scientist and physician, Solomon Levit, who organized the first special genetic clinic in Russia and third research institute of medical genetics. Solomon Levit organized medical genetics research of different diseases, including tuberculosis in Soviet Russia, using a different approach, including studies of twins. Studies of inherited factors influenced to development of tuberculosis hippiform with collaboration with pathomorphologist Vladimir Stevko. And at last, in 1949, John Robert Holden postulated a cave hypothesis for us. He proposed that the majority of the genetic diversity found within human population has been selected for an maintained by infection diseases. It has been claimed that Mycobacterium tuberculosis was responsible for 1/5 of all deaths occurring in West Europe after Industrial Revolution. Therefore, it is likely that Mycobacterium has had a major effect on the evolution of the human genome. For us, it's the main idea for our research work. Tuberculosis, it's a multifactorial disease which depends from such factors as social and environmental factors, poverty, bad nutrition, overpopulation, and migrations. Mycobacterium properties such as pathogenicity and drug resistance. Host conditioned, adequate immune defense dependent from human genome. And, of course, HIV infection. At first, the evidence of involving genetic factors to tuberculosis development was based on results of clinical epidemiological investigation and study of twins. For example, it's well-known mistake which occurred in Lübeck city of Germany. Their physician are confused the vaccine and inoculate not BCG vaccine, but virulent mycobacteria. In the result of this mistake, there are 77 children was died from heavy tuberculosis, but two-thirds of these children was not ill. Why? What's the reason of such a different reaction of immune defense on the pathogen? First of all, it may be a genetic factors of host organism. The different concordancy of tuberculosis during monozygous and dizygous twins also serves as a proof of influence of hereditary on disease development. Also, the different rate of tuberculosis in different countries or populations occur on the basis of different degrees of immune defense from a specific pathogen, which depends from hereditary factors. As you see, in Russia and in India, also as in African countries, the rate of tuberculosis is very high, whereas in North America, Europe and Australia, it's very low. This picture is also taught about it. In Russia, the level of epidemiological data of tuberculosis are also strongly differ between various populations. In Siberia, there are higher than in Russia, and in some regions, like as Tver Republic, the tuberculosis incidence was always been substantially higher than average. This may be related to social and other factors, or it may reflect genetically determined susceptibility to tuberculosis to veneers. There are some different approaches which are now used for detection. He identified genes of predisposition to tuberculosis. First of all, it's using of animal models. The second method is studying of individuals with high susceptibility to non-pathogen mycobacterials. Case control study. Search of association between polymorphic variants of candidate gene and tuberculosis and genome-wide linkage study. In this slide, you can see the different genetic locus involved in susceptibility to tuberculosis. Really, the number of these genes are more widely. Today, with the development of molecular genetic methods, several tens of genes predisposing to tuberculosis are known. These genes are composed of some continuum from single gene with strong effect, Mendelian genes, to polygenic system, which with pure impact. In particular, rare genes with cause primary immunodeficits, one gene multiple infection, major genes. Which cause new primary immunodeficits, but without such strong effect. It is one gene, one infection. And polygenic model, where effect of every gene is low, but in some they lead to one infection disease. Let's get equivalent to some of these genes. First of all, and the first gene, it's a RAM gene, which was detected by a method of positional cloning for infection diseases. In 1992, the neuron gene was mapped in mice, and then, in 1994, human Jamolokov gene was mapped on human chromosome number 2. Naupaudin gene is coding the extracellular ion canal channel. The naupaudin protein is believed to be a transmembrane iron transporter, which is localized to the late endosomal compartment of resting macrophages and is recruited to the phagosomal or phagocytes. Now, the neuropathin gene, neuron 1 gene is one of the most actively studied genes at the human. There are 58 known SNPs of human neuron 1 gene in database, and it's about 10 SNPs of neuron 1 gene are most studied. There are more than 15 associations with tuberculosis were detected in different world population, but we have this discrepancy of results from major gene effect in Canadian aborigine population to absence of association in Dania, Brazil, Morocco, and in Tuareg Republic. Another gene is toll-like receptor gene, which toll-like was firstly detected in Drosophila melanogaster and later in over different organisms and human. Toll-like receptors is a new systems of detection of infectious agents by dendrit cells. Now it is in a great interest of human genetics for to this gene, especially for toll-like receptor number 2 and toll-like receptor number 4. And we have some association of polymorphic variants of these genes with mycobacterial tuberculosis infection and pulmonary disease, pulmonary tuberculosis. Another interesting investigation of tuberculosis stability, it's the monogenic form of non-pathogenic mycobacterial infection. Recently, in 1990, some individuals with severe infection due to otherwise likely pathogenic mycobacteria or Salmonella species have been shown to be unable to produce a response to interferon gamma. This inability results from deleterious mutation in any one of five direct, different genes involved in type 1 cytokine cascade. It's interleukin 12 gene and receptor to interleukin 12, interferon gamma receptor, and state 1 gene. First description of such infection was in 1951. Now the mutations are detected in this gene, and they have different degrees of effect. It is depend from coding protein and effect of mutations. The rate of the disseminated BCG infection in France is very low. It's maybe 1 per 2 million of deaths. Clinical tuberculosis has been diagnosed at least 4 individuals with deficits in the type 1 cytokine cascade. Why not more? Tom Ottenhoff wrote that this may be the result of lack of exposure, and many of the individuals studied come from countries where mycobacterial tuberculosis is not longer endemic. Firstly, it's European countries. Individuals with such defects may be that are affected with tuberculosis die before a genetic diagnostic is made, or alternatively, that such genetic defects are not considered once individuals present with tuberculosis. And it is possible that resistance to mycobacterium tuberculosis in human is less dependent on interleukin 12 and interferon gamma immunity than in resistance to mycobacterial bovis or non-tuberculosis mycobacteria. And not long ago, we have a new interesting idea that primary disseminated form of tuberculosis in children can be result of the mutation of gene of type 1 cytokine cascade. It's very interesting because it is a very hard form of tuberculosis in children, and maybe we will find the reason why this form become it in this in children. In this slide, you can see the results of genome-wide screen at tuberculosis. There are only three whole genome screening was performed, and only in last studied in Morocco, we will find we find the locus with higher Claude Bell, which spoke about the association of Field's locus with tuberculosis. But in this aspect, we also have some problem. We should define the candidate genes from this loci. These problems we can resolve with your help, maybe. On this picture, you can see the knowing candidate genes and loci of predisposition of susceptibility to tuberculosis. As you can see, all the chromosomes have genes and loci which are stated with tuberculosis. And really, we list this list constantly replenishes, also with the help of bioinformatics researchers. If we will looking again at our continuum, we called mapping this gene on it. We know that the gene with strong effect, it's a HLA and other genes, which led to rare tradition primary immunodeficit. We also know the gene with strong effect on many infections, including tuberculosis, with strong effect on this disease, like us, the gene of monogenic tuberculosis and NRAMP1 gene, and with genes with poor impact effect on disease development, which can and be pointed in polygenic predisposition. Well, now, let me present for you results of our study of genetic predisposition to tuberculosis in Siberian population. Because of high rate of tuberculosis in Tuva, it was of interest for us to study the association between tuberculosis stability genes and tuberculosis in Tuvinians compared with other populations. We examined 238 patients from Tuva Republic and 304 patients, Caucasian patients from Tomsk region. We also investigate health control population and tuberculosis families. Summary, it was studied more than 1,500 individuals. We studied 9 polymorphic variants of 5 candidate genes of predisposition to tuberculosis. We have results that in comparison between Tuvinians and Russian and other world population, significant differences of allelic frequencies for all studied polymorphisms were found. It can be evidence of ethnic specificity of polymorphism of gene predisposing to tuberculosis. But unexpected for us, at Tuvinians there are no association of studied genes or studied polymorphic variants with tuberculosis itself, and different clinical forms of disease were detected. At the same time, in Caucasian population of Tomsk region, we detect the association with 5 variants from 9 investigated polymorphic variants. In family studied, we also find in Caucasian population of Tomsk Republic the association of polymorphic variants of interleukin-12 gene with tuberculosis. We also found the quantity of sessions with qualitative and quantitative clinical parameters describing clinical cause of tuberculosis, such as blood analysis, X-ray dates, asymptomatics, and in Russian population. To summarize, we found the structure of genetic predisposition to tuberculosis in Tuvinians and Russians is not the same, possibly because they have different models of disease inheriting. The model of polygenic inheritance is more representative for Russian because of the long mycobacterial tuberculosis exposition history. For Tuvinians, maybe the major gene model is more characteristic when disease development is caused by one or more genes with relatively strong effect. This effect is reinforced by studied genes and polymorphic variants with frequency, which frequency are more higher in Tuvinians than in other populations. Studied genes are more important factors in forming of clinical polymorphism of tuberculosis in studied populations. Now we connect our research study, and we now collecting and studying of new groups of tuberculosis patients from other Siberian regions, like us, Jakuts and Buryat populations. We explore, have explanation of spectrum of studied genes marker in these populations. We also want to analyze the mutation of genes involved in TH1 type of immunity at children with active tuberculosis. We made the experimental research work like a studying of gene expression in monocytes at different antigenic stimulation. And we want to develop and we developed the Russian and international collaboration in this problem. We have a good collaboration with Ministry of Health of Tuva Republic, where we performed our first investigation with Siberia State Medical University, with the Professor Strelis, with Yakutsk Research Center, with Koch-Meshnikov Forum, Germany-Russia in Siberian State Medical University, with Wellcome Trust Center of Human Genetics. Now we perform with Professor Adrian Hill investigation about 40 polymorphic variants of toll-like receptors in Tuvinians and Russians. And we have collaboration with Novosibirsk Research Institute of Tuberculosis. It's shortly about application of nucleology. You know this application, but I told it again. It's an understanding of infection diseases pathogenesis and host defense from infection agents. It's a prediction of disease development risk as in population level, also and on individual level. It's a design of new and more effective vaccines. Because BCG vaccine is not effective now in mostly populations. It's design of new drugs and the medicine of future, it's genomic medicines and gene therapy. Thank you for your attention. And if you have questions, I hope to answer for it. Yes, please.
Mostly in the Western world. One reason, of course, is that because in some of the poor countries, the tuberculosis is so much, if you cure 90,000 or 100,000, you do not really report, and data is not very good for XDR or MDR in those countries. But from your data, do you, could you correlate MDR with genetic disposition, which you are thinking of?
Thanks for your question. First of all, maybe the one of the reason it's the different genetics and different immune defense from mycobacteria in different populations, which was organized during evolution of this population. For example, in Tuvá Republic, it's the population which possibly has no tuberculosis in the long time, but they have tuberculosis in the middle of last century when the it was connected to Soviet Russian, and the Russian migration was bringing the tuberculosis into our republic. In the first years when the Russian migration became to Tuva Republic, the rate of tuberculosis was very and very high. It is a hike now, but it's not so high how it was in first years. Why multi-drug resistance tuberculosis? Maybe tuberculosis it's a multifactorial disease. Yes, it's depend from different factors and also from medicine and maybe the different level of medicine in different countries. It's the one of the factor which result in the multi-drug resistance. But in Russia, again, in the one level of medicine in different part of country, we have a different rates. Why? Maybe because of genetics base of predisposition to this disease.
I have a question. What is the selection criteria for your cases?
Excuse me?
When you take cases and controls, what is selection criteria for your cases? How do you define cases?
We take the patient with tuberculosis with different form of disease, and we analyze us, the tuberculosis patient as well, and we analyze the association with disease, with different form of diseases.
Does it mean that it's an active disease or?
All the patient was with active disease, yes.
And the controls are?
It was the half people who never ill, never ill in tuberculosis.
They may have
latent
disease.
Excuse me?
They can have
latent
disease.
Huh? Yes, maybe. Yes, they can have.
Match.
Yes. The ideal control for us may be with patient who have infected by disease but never ill. Maybe it's a best control for us, but it is very hard to collect these samples.
You can do PPD positive, PPD negative.
No, because it's also very hard to collect these samples. We should take the medical cards of this patient. It's sometimes not possible.
Sample populations. One is the Russian,
yes.
The other one is the Tuva population. So the Russian population would obviously be a larger population.
Yes.
So how do you exclude the genetic, the population stratification in your cases versus controls? Because since a larger population, it may not be genetically homogeneous.
Thanks for your question. We did not do.
Is there any way you can find LD blocks on either side of your markers? Is there any background markers available for you?
I don't know.
And the third question was, can you go back to the gene list or the marker list you have selected?
Mm-hmm.
So most of them, I think, fall in the same pathway.
This list?
No, the this selected markers. I think it is. No? not this. This markers you have selected.
Oh, okay.
Below?
Below?
Yeah.
Below.
Okay.
This? Yeah, again. Again, again.
One more.
Okay.
The set of mutations you have typed in your population.
It's not our studying. It's...
No, not this. You had a list of markers. Next.
Ah, okay, I see you.
Yeah, this.
So, and you got your significance in the interleukin polymorphisms also in Russian population? In your research? Can you go to the results?
Excuse me?
Next slide. Next slide. Yeah. So you get significance in your IL-12B, 1B?
Yes.
IL-1?
Yes.
So these are the same pathway. These genes are the same pathway.
IL-12 is...
Not. Interleukin-12 and interleukin-1? Yes?
No. Different segments.
Different segments.
It's a different set of kinds.
Type 1.
Probably you can, if you go to the previous slide.
No, back.
Do you see that?
It's the tuvinian populations, yes?
So interleukin 1,
yes.
The frequencies are reversed.
Interleukin 1 and?
Versus interleukin 12 and. Three markers for interleukin 1.
Interleukin 12, interleukin 1B, and receptor antagonist of interleukin 1. It's LL1A1. It's a Ventura polymorphisms, and we analyze LL1 and LL2 of.
So the idea was if you have multiple genes very closely related, you can do something like a multi dimensional detection. You can look at genetic interactions. It's taking markers together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
you can build
haplotypes. Maybe. Okay, thank you. Any question? Thank you.
Journalists. Yeah. Okay. Is it okay for? I'm sorry for my absence. We have, 15-20 minutes to have some discussion. We will have bus at the entrance of the institute to go to the lunch, and I think in 20 minutes we can go and to go to the lunch. So my additional announcement for today's program. I hope that after the lunch our seminar will be visited by academician Marchuk Guri Ivanovich. He is head of ITLP program in Russia, and I hope it is will be very important for us, and this is one important thing. And another thing, that after the program you will have some farewell party with beer and for all participants. So it will be about we will have round table about 6 o'clock. Then after the round table about 7 o'clock, the round table will continued by farewell beer party. Okay.
And so on and so on.
And so on. Okay. So I think that in 20 or 15 minutes I will wait you for the lunch downstairs. Okay.